4, Victor Whiskey Alpha, mobile.
N0, TR mobile.
Good morning, Tom. How we doing?
All right. I'm just heading back from Aldi's and Walmart and Shooters and headed towards home.
Sounds like fun. Now, you didn't stop at Aldi's or Golden Corral?
Don't Corral up here anymore. We stopped at Aldi's and Walmart and Shooters and Pistol Range over there.
Pistol Range banging away.
No, I don't have to. I can go out back and shoot if I want. I just had a pistol I wanted modified a little bit on the hammer.
Well, so you're one of those people that would shoot somebody if they come in on you, huh?
Oh, no, I ain't that type of guy, but I'd say if they was a crook and they couldn't run over 1,000 foot a second, they'd be in deep stuff.
Kill somebody that way, Tom.
No, I... no way, Jose. unless they stepped foot in the house or started to harm one of us. That's a different story.
Teasing you a little bit because it's kind of like American Express. If you see me, I got one.
yeah. If E.F. Hutton talks, you better listen, and that would be me. You got to remember, Steve, I'm from Kansas.
Hutton, but if Smith and Wesson talks, you better duck.
That's fact. Oh, it's a fun hobby, I'll say that. And this was kind of a collector's thing that I just keep in the safe. It was my brother-in-law's, and he was on the Wichita Police Force for 26 years, and then a security guard for Boeing for 10, and he gave me a couple of pistols, and this one was set up for single action only, and I don't like it that way. Or not single, double action only, and I like to be able to cock it and shoot it. You're not accurate shooting a double action pistol, double action. There are times when police officers need it, I'm sure, but not for just out plinking cans and stuff.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a collector too, and I'm not going to say what I got over the air, but you're going to have to come up and visit the Cowboys and some World War One and World War Two sometime.
Yeah, I have a friend that brought back two M1 carbines from Korea. Not carbines, excuse me. M1A1s. And they are beautiful. And one of them's even got his company engraved in the side of it. And no, I would not say who it is. It's just something you don't say. But it'd be kind of hard to bother mine. They're anchored to the floor in concrete. And I think the safe weighs about 900 pounds. So it ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, I'm in a similar situation. But I tell you what. What are you going to do when Bernie says, come turn them in?
Think of that, Steve. Without even asking it.
It won't ever come to that. Hopefully we'll maintain our freedoms. But in the meantime, I bought a brand new set of wheels for my new Dodge truck. They're ion wheels. And, buddy, let me tell you what. I'm having to go back down to my tire guy and have these wheels taken off and put my regular factory wheels back on because these cheap ion wheels cracked in the rim where the spokes come down to them, and they're leaking air.
This is NZ0TR. That's a bad deal. I got mine at Discount Tire, and sometimes Sam's and Costco's has got them. But being my truck's a 2011, it's hard to find some. So I found some at Discount Tire, and those people, as far as I'm concerned, are first class. They've always taken good care of me. And I put a set on my Tacoma. Oh, they've been on there 2, 3, 4 years. I really like them. But that's a chance you take with aftermarket wheels, Steve. I've heard problems like that coming up before.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. I looked up my local dealer for these wheels, even though I got them on Amazon. And I got them on Amazon Prime. And guess who the local dealer was? Discount Tire.
Yep, I don't doubt you. I didn't have a problem with them. I don't know what brand mine are. But, no, I've never sold these other Tacoma wheels, and I shouldn't put them on something. I just don't like dealing with Craigslist because I've heard of too many problems. But my neighbor, he sells stuff on there all the time. But I'd rather walk around the problem than through it. And I'm afraid if somebody tried to rob me, it'd turn into a nasty situation.
Yeah, I hear you. No, I don't do anything on Craigslist. And that's the last place I go looking for something online. You know, that couple that was murdered about 10 or 15 years ago up at the Sphinx on Highway 14 and 11? That's what got them up there. He was selling a car on Craigslist.
My neighbor does all the time, but he's always got a pistol in his pocket, so they best be on the up and up when he does. I'd just rather avoid a problem than take a chance on it. And I've never cheated anyone in my life or missed a bill, and I don't intend to now. And I'd get a bad case of close pores, as we used to call it up in Kansas, if somebody tried that with me.
I kind of go by that old thing of fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And as far as I'm concerned, that particular set of wheels is going to... Matter of fact, I'm actually considering calling the NTSB on them, because I'm going to tell you something. If one of those, I'm going to pull a camper with my truck. It's a 2500. And if one of those wheels broke while I was pulling a fifth wheel, it could be catastrophic.
10CR. Well, Steve, I'll tell you what. One of my first job was 32 years at the same plant, but they shut down, and I had to find another job just a few years before I retired. And I worked at a printing company for a year, and then I went to a wheel plant there in Pittsburgh, Kansas, and I worked there 4 years on maintenance as a technician. And we made 55,000 to 80,000 wheels a month, or excuse me, a week, and we always kept about a quarter million on hand because everything to the factories, the car plants like Ford and GM, most of ours were GM, and we even made Hummer wheels. They had to be there at the site at exactly the right time. They don't keep inventories. But to make a short story long, they worried more, and the personnel supervisor was a friend. He told me that. He said they worried more about a bad set of wheels getting out of that plant than they did on someone stealing a set of wheels, which wasn't going to happen with the security they had. But, you know, it's got to be tried, I'm sure, everywhere. But that worried them the most. They did not want to get a bad wheel out there. You wind up like Firestone did when they put out bad tires, you know.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. That wasn't all Firestone's fault. A lot of that was Ford's fault. And they, at the time, owned Firestone. And the only way they could get a reasonable ride out out of that Explorer was to reduce the air pressure in the tires down so low that it generated extra heat and they came apart. Yeah, Ford should have taken a big hit on that along with Firestone.
It's in 0TR. Yeah, I've heard stories like that, Steve, but, boy, I mean, when they come off of the line down there where they cast them, Steve, they went directly to X-ray at our plant, and they went through more testing than you could shake a stick at, and then they would segment them and cut them up in pieces even, looking for voids in the aluminum, and they are not all aluminum. They got a lot of stuff in them that's secretive that they didn't even let the people in the plant know other than the chemists. And then they go through acid baths and shot blasts, and it was amazing what those went through. And the final place where they come in, the robots put them on the line, and they come into this German helium leak tester that I worked on. And it had a mass spectrometer on it and all kinds of fancy stuff without going into it. And it put a huge vacuum on that and tried to suck helium through the porosity of the metal, if you can imagine that. It could detect a leak that would take your tire up to 7 years to go down. And if it did detect it, it went into the line and went back and got remelted. That's how closely our plant, it was Superior Industries, and that's how closely they checked them.
Well, that's a good thing, because now I'm going to tell you, it is a mission-critical component.
There's no doubt. I remember I was working in the test facility one day. I did preventative maintenance, one of the best jobs I ever had. And I wasn't on the helium detectors at the time, and I was checking this big machine. And it had this huge steel wheel that was several feet wide. And, of course, you always had to have ear protection. And this wheel would start in to the face of a tire. And it would just keep going and going and going. It had a huge DC drive on it. And it would go till complete failure of that wheel. I was in there one day, and I'm used to working on 483 phase, and when it goes off, it sounded like a shotgun. And I didn't realize it at the time. They took them to that nth degree, and one of those tires blowed up while I was in there doing maintenance, and I like to mess my britches. I'll tell you. It was scary. But they had a cage around it, and when it blew up, well, then they pull the wheel off and send it to all of the different testing facilities.
Yeah, I bet that was some interesting work. I've done some similar type, I helped set up some testing procedures for certain types of situations in industrial. For some manufacture of some very specialized tires in video imaging, as far as I can go with that for security purposes. But it was quite interesting. And as a matter of fact, you would be amazed. You would be amazed how many people pull in tires from their competitors to do non-destructive testing to see how they were made.
Well, they certainly did there at Superior, I'll tell you. And that plant was going good, and when the automobile industry went to heck, they ran the inventory down as much as they could, and then they shut it down, and it was over 15 acres. I don't know how large it got before I left. And I worked in X-ray for a little while, but not the technical side like you were on. It was just preventative maintenance where it went through the machines, but you had to wear a badge, of course. But like I said, when they come off that casting deck, and that was the first place they went through, was X-ray. It was interesting. And I worked in several other areas. I worked on overhead cranes, and they'd make them tear those cranes down that lifted those hot ladles of aluminum which were 1,100 degrees, a little excess of that. And we had to tear those cranes completely apart and rebuild every bearing in it, every gear in it, because that's what General Motors required. And the only thing we didn't replace was the electrical, so I disassembled the electrical, and Joe, he'd take apart the gears, because I'm not a gear person. And then we put them back together, and we worked 20 feet above that casting deck. I did that for a year. And I took an infrared thermometer one day, and there was an 18-inch fan behind me, and it was 146 degrees, I think, Steve, coming out of that fan.
Now, is that the place that you worked that shut down?
Yeah. Yeah, it was called Superior Industries. And now it's all full of firecrackers. One of the largest distributor of fireworks in the world has that place now.
Well, is it a distributor or a manufacturer?
No, it's a distributor. And they go to China every year and order their stuff, and it comes directly in there. And I don't know how it comes in, trucks or rail. I'm not sure. And they do the big stuff, too. They go out and put on these shows all over the country.
Well, generally, you cannot transport in a truck more than so many pounds. And then they have standards as far as units of pressure from an explosion that a particular material can give off before you hit the limit of what you can ship in a truck. In other words, you could not ship a whole tractor trailer load of that stuff at one time.
It's in Gerald T.R. That's correct, Mike. Brother-in-law was on the bomb squad in Wichita, and he'd explain the difference in the different types of explosives, and he had some funny stories to tell. The biggest ones when he went out, and these parents were taking over their grandparents' farm south of Wichita, and it had 144 cases of dynamite that was real old, and it was leaching nitroglycerin out of it. And he had to call Fort Riley and get the bomb squad to come down there. But, yeah, Superior had another place where they handled the big ones down at Crestline, Kansas. And these Mexican fellows were in there handling the big stuff. And I think it killed four of them instantaneously because flash powder is static sensitive. And they said they could hear that explosion for miles, Steve. It was in a tractor trailer bed, you know.
Well, wouldn't want to be them.
Well, I bought a book one time way back. I can't remember the name of that place. And it was on improvised explosives. And I was scared to even order it. And I destroyed the book later. But it had how to make M80s, and that's what I wanted to do, because you couldn't buy them anymore, using like post-toasties boxes and stuff. And then you could order your stuff in the old days from out in Utah and get the stuff to make your own flash powder. And the second I saw where that stuff was static sensitive, I just got rid of the book, because there was no way. Hand-loaded ammunition for over 50 years, Steve. I don't mind handling IMR stuff and things like that, nitrocellulose and all, but I wouldn't touch that flash powder for all the money in the world, and I just did without any M80s. Hi-hi.
Oh, what years was that you had that book?
I don't know. Heck, I was born so many years ago, you know. I'm 72, but probably in the 60s, I would say. No, wouldn't have been the 60s. Would have been the early 70s.
Now, that makes sense, because you can't buy that stuff without all kinds of federal licenses and federal oversight and regulation, and, oh, man, If it's much more than a firecracker, you got to have fire department permission to store it and inspections and everything else in the book. Yeah, they've gone nuts over that stuff.
And I think that's great, because they had how to make your own C4 in there and other types of explosives at home. And I'm not exaggerating. I wouldn't even consider such a thing, but I did want to make my own firecrackers, and it just it wasn't worth the risk. I mean, you take rifle powder and pour some out on the floor and throw a match in it, and it'll just go whoosh, and that's all there is to it. You take flash powder, it'll explode if you walk across the floor and you got static on your shoes.
Matter of fact, you know those little things that you throw on the floor and they pop? They've got a micro amount of that stuff in them. And, man, I tell you what. But you know what? I don't know how in the world they're getting away with selling Tannerite.
I was talking with a guy there yesterday about that. He thought that my neighbors had set off some Tannerite. And I told him, no, I was there. And they just took some missiles and hooked them together with the fuses and put it in a 5-gallon can and set it off. Crazy. And they're older guys. But I never laughed so hard in my life, Steve. If you want to see a video of it, I can show it to you. I thought, oh, no, the neighbors ain't going to like that. And we kind of live out at the edge of town, you know. But they just, wow, it made a heck of a bang and did wonders to that 5-gallon can. Blowed the lid off of it, at least 70 feet high. I wish this guy'd get out of my way, sitting there texting, and I can't see the lane there. But I bought some Tannerite, probably 11, 12 years ago, when it first come out. And I went in to a gun shop, and it was run by two police officers. And, of course, you knew everybody in a small town. And I asked them if it was legal, and they said, oh, yeah. Well, there was a highway patrolman standing there, had his little boy in his arms. And I said, no, I'm not going to buy this if it isn't legal. He says, oh, yeah, it's legal. I said, how far can they hear this? And he said, not around 8 miles. I says, well, I can go out to my friend Henry's out in the country and try it. And, you know, I never did. And I give it away to a guy when I got down here that does live out up towards Landrum. And I just never would set it off. But the guy up on the hill, he took half of his the other day and set it off at once, this fella told me. And I heard it. And it sounded like a transformer out in front of your house going off.
Off one charge of 4 pounds one time, and it was sitting on top of a beaver den that was doing damage on my lake. And let me tell you what, bud, no more beaver den.
I've seen that. Well, when this fella and his son-in-law set this thing off, my video shows a lot of Bermuda grass and stuff, because I'm rolling around on the ground laughing, Steve. I can't imagine what that much Tannerite would do. Good Lord. And, you know, there's fellows that could use that for illicit purposes, shall we say.
But not had set off a 5-gallon can, not a 5-gallon, but a 5-pound can, and it was on the inside of a car. And, buddy, let me tell you what, that thing split the roof on that car and opened it up like a tin can.
It's a high-powered rifle of that velocity to set it off. You can't set it off with a .22. And the highway patrolman told me, so Tommy said, it's perfectly legal to transport so long as you don't mix those two parts. But, guys, mine was just a little bitty bottle of it, Steve. I didn't even want that around. I'm kind of funny about that. I don't want something, you know, illegal around, and I know that's not. But, guys, if they get enough of it and combine it, you could really do some terrible damage. So I'm like you. I don't see how they're selling it. You can go anywhere and buy it. You can go to Cabela's or any gun store.
Yeah, well, I think the way they're getting away with it, it comes in two separate, within the package, it's two separate sealed items. And as long as the two items are not combined, it is completely inert.
Yeah, that's just what I told you there on that last transmission. I realize that. But you know what? There's some guys out there that aren't the brightest stars in the constellation that get a hold of stuff like that. And there's some of them that own AR-15s and such that don't make me warm and fuzzy.
Hey, boys.
Yeah, but some of them are nuts.
There. But you know, how do you separate the nut burgers from the folks like us?
That's the problem. That's just the problem. I think they let the cat out of the bag, and I've belonged in the MRA longer than you've been alive. But I don't agree with everything they do. I think they let the cat out of the bag when they started selling military weapons to civilians. That I don't agree with. You don't need them. You know, a good old Model 70 or 700 ADL or a Savage rifle with 5 shots is plenty for shooting deer. I don't like those ARs, SKSs, and AK-47s in civilian hands. I know that makes me a bad guy because all my buddies own them. But I don't care if they do. I wouldn't have one in the house.
Well, yeah, but Tom, what is the difference between it and a, say, a Remington 30-06 semi-automatic?
A Remington 30-06 automatic holds 5 shots. That's a 7.42, if I'm not mistaken. And those things can hold up to 100 rounds. Not necessary to kill a deer.
Get out, you gotta spray and pray when you're shooting at 10 cans.
Yeah, and how many, well, see, I'm up in Kansas and Oklahoma. How many do you know that has converted those to full auto? And some of them, one of my best friends was the chief of police for Joplin, Missouri. He had an AK-47, and that's fine. But it ain't always somebody of that caliber that owns one. And he liked to shoot 10 cans with it, was his explanation. And he had an SKS. But, Steve, I'm saying, if you look around ever since the shooting in Littleton, Colorado, which I worked out there as an engineer one time, and I'm not an engineer, but they sent me out there as such, and field service engineer. And ever since then, it's exploded. We didn't have that kind of things when I was a kid happening. And nowadays, they've gone too far. I mean, a kid takes a BB gun to school and he's expelled. And it's just crazy the way it's went in the opposite direction. But every one of those shootings, almost, if you look at them, tell me what kind of rifle they had, Steve.
Put you there, you know. These wackos out there, they think they got to get into something that they shouldn't have, and they see that as just because of the look of it, it ain't no different from any function. Matter of fact, that 7.42 would do twice the damage that AR would do, but, you know, there, like I said, there's idiots out there. So, how do you separate the idiots from the normal people?
Well, I disagree with you on that. That's a hunting rifle. Most people, they don't even have full metal jackets available for the old six anymore, but it's a hunting cartridge. But you take an AR-15 and a 223, that's why they were developed for killing within 300 yards, because they were lighter, more ammunition and all. And that's fine for the military. I just don't see that it's a necessity for civilians, and it isn't. But, like I said, my friends would blackball me if they heard me say that. But I don't care if they got them, because my friends are usually pretty sane. But these kids, they get on these video games, and they kill like humans are a target. When we shoot targets here, we don't shoot human targets. We shoot bullseyes or 10 cans and mostly 22s. on there. It's paramilitary stuff, and my grandsons have got them, but I refuse to buy it for them. And funny thing, my son-in-law's mother turned around and bought them the tour of duty and all of that, and they were like 10, 11 years old at the time. I refused to buy them that, yet I'll take them out and shooting with a 22 at targets. You start shooting human targets, and it de-emphasizes the fact that they're humans, and when they get a little older and they get ticked off, they take one in school and start shooting. I don't know. I see a correlation there in my eyes.
Tom, you wait till I get you over to the meeting tonight. You are blackballed. Oh, me. Well, are you coming to the meeting tonight?
I plan on it. I got a couple of items I have to drop off to take to other folks. And I ordered one of those Arduinos, although I don't know if I'm going to get into the programming of it. I'll say I'm too old for that. I guess I'm not. I'm probably too lazy, but I might, according to how it stimulates me. But I don't think I'm going to carry a laptop and all, Steve. I can't hardly carry in myself, let alone a laptop. But, yeah, I should be there. But it's going to be crummy in that parking lot because it's going to be raining.
I was having to order my Wendy's burger before I go up to the tire place. So you don't know if you'll build it or not, huh? How come?
Oh, I'll probably build it. I just don't know if I'm going to... They had a download for software and something else there. And I briefly looked at it. And this other one, you had to extract the files, so such and such, and all of that. I don't know. I may look at it again in a little bit just to see what it's like. Building, I like doing that. In fact, I got a power supply I just repaired for a guy that I'm going to bring back. But I don't do a lot of it anymore, I'll tell you that. It can get to be a pain with this surface mount technology. I just can't do that. I don't have the equipment to do it, and it's out of my realm anyway, Steve.
I'm just not quite ready to get into that stuff yet. And is that what the whole meeting pretty much is going to be about tonight?
From what I gather, I would say yes. That's probably what's going to wind up being. And that's why I was weighing whether or not I'd go, but I already paid my $20 for the kit, so I guess I'm kind of condemned to it.
Well, I'm still going to go, and I'm still going to watch, but now if they get off into, trying to set one up and trying to program it and all that good stuff, I may go ahead and bug out, because I didn't get one of the kits, and I'm not, like I said, I'm not into that quite yet. So, I'll see you over there this evening. And I'm headed up to my tire place. Oh, my goodness, if you're on the way to Hampton Boulevard, they've had a little fender bender.
No, we're sitting in the driveway here at home, Steve. I'm like you. But, Steve, back in the days when I was coming up, I mean, I studied... most everything from vacuum tubes through PLCs, and with 8088 microprocessors and stuff, and even before that, Fortran, COBOL, and junk like that, and I had enough. I'm just not in the mood to dedicate that much time, and they'll be making things that I'd done when 20, 30 years ago, only they do it differently now with their coding and stuff, and it's just not something that intrigues me. Right? Well, I still am interested, but and I don't think to the point that I I want to get into the programming part, because you're making simple little things for, like I do with a 555 timer or something like that. And we had 7,400 integrated circuits and EEPROMs, like Dave was talking about the other night, that you'd erase with the ultraviolet and reprogram. And I've been through all that stuff, but I can't say that I remember a whole lot of it. But I just don't know if I want to dedicate that kind of time, because it makes, you know, motion sensors. You can do anything with an Arduino, I guess. But and the old guys told me, oh, you're an old fuddy-duddy, you need to try it. And they're older guys, but they still want to learn. So I think when you get too old to learn, it's time to croak, and I'm not quite ready for that, Steve. So I may. We'll see. I'll just have to weigh it kind of like you're going to do. But building it, that's no problem. All right, Steve, we're home. Really enjoyed it. Pleasure's all mine. You have a good day and a safe day, my friend. 73s. This is in 0TR.
Well, if you're like me, Tom, it probably has a little bit to do with the fact that, like me, I've worked with that stuff all my life. You know, matter of fact, I owned my own EEPROM burner right for a while. And, you know, I just as soon get away from that stuff now that I'm retard. R-E-T-A-R-D. So, anyhow, this is KN4BWA, N0TR. You have a good afternoon, buddy. I'm clear.